From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 586, Cloud-Based IT Automation with guest Dana Epp. Recorded Monday, April 23rd, 2018. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. He's been absent for a while, but my friend Dana Epp is coming back on the show, and he's got a new bio. Dana has spent decades as an architect that focuses on helping secure software, data, and infrastructure. When he's not helping to build and grow software companies, he's advising others on adapting and embracing the ever-changing landscape of IT. As both a Microsoft Regional Director and MVP, he spends a great deal of time on security engineering in the cloud, focused on building safe, decoupled systems. And you can follow him at danaepp.com. Welcome back, my friend.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm good. You know, you used to be a regular back in the old days. I could count on you. You know, once a year or so, you'd pop in and scare me to death around security-related stuff. And you've been gone for a few years. Moved to Vegas, got a real job or something. Something crazy happened to you.
Yeah, I sold my last software company to a large software company down in the States. And as part of that, I had to move down there for a few years and help with the transition. That's now done. And I'm back up in Vancouver building a new startup. And I am free to be on the road there chatting with people like you all the time. So.
Well, I'm glad to have you back. And it's all, you know.
Thanks, man.
I've always appreciated your take because you've got a strong engineering background. You're a business owner. As well as, you know, doing that security thing without terrorizing everybody. Yeah, because it's lots to be terrified of. Although, rumor has it, once you switch to the cloud, everything's fine.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know, it's funny. So I hear that all the time, right? People abdicate responsibility thinking that, hey, the vendors will take it. Hey, Microsoft, they're going to take care of it all. It's like, well, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's still you own it. It's your data. At the end of the day that you need to protect. And that's why they call it information security.
Right, right.
Right. It's one of those things. Now, you do get the benefits, right?
Like sure.
One of the values, you know, you're never going to have the investment capability to put in towards security. Someone like Microsoft or Amazon would because, you know, that's their business. That's their bread and butter. So you get to take the benefits of all of that infrastructure security that they put in place and all that. But at the end of the day, there's always a responsibility. So you're not abdicating, you're delegating. You're only delegating certain parts of it. You still are responsible for the data, how it's accessed and maintained. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people don't see is, you know, you hear about Azure as an example in the Microsoft world and everyone think, oh, it's a dev thing or, you know, it's an IT thing because I can host my VMs up there. And
right.
There's this thing in between, right? I call it like, you know, infrastructure as code, or I actually call it everything as code, like everything from the DevOps world, when you're deploying applications to the infrastructure you need to put up in the cloud, that all really should be running as code. And I think if that's done that way, it changes the parameter that we look at when it comes to how we protect and secure our infrastructure. Because now IT people need to think in many ways similar to how developers are on how do you build and deploy reproducible things, right? Whatever
right.
It may be. You know, it may be services that you have in the cloud, it may be actual infrastructure itself, it may be data, whatever it is, it's one of those things you got to think about.
Yeah, we hear this configuration as code on a routine basis, but are you really talking about infrastructure as code? Are we there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you take a look at like in the Microsoft world, ARM, Azure Resource Manager, makes it very easy to actually programmatically deploy not just infrastructure, but entire stacks of things.
Right.
So you could be deploying virtual machines along with databases, along with Redis cache services, all linked and tied together. And then you can go that one step further and do things that you've not traditionally been able to do on-premise without huge investments in your data center. Things like being able to have a HSM or, you know, a hardware security module that can store credentials in a really good way. We have, you know, Key Vault in Azure to do that. And
right.
You can link that infrastructure together to work all in a way that's more meaningful. But what's interesting is it starts getting into this. When you think as configuration as code, a lot of people miss this. Well, how do you maintain and manage change, right? Change management is part of that. And how do you understand and guarantee it's the way you want it? Because I love Azure. It's probably one of the most powerful cloud platforms I've seen out there, but it scares the hell out of me because a single click can immediately put you in a very vulnerable state from a security perspective. As an example, you can go into the SQL Azure site, click a single button, and you've turned off the encryption. If you deployed this 2 years ago, you don't even have encryption on and you don't know this. And these are single clicks, but if you start doing things by using things like ARM templates and you're taking advantage of the management APIs, it's actually quite easy to programmatically, as an IT professional, make sure stuff is working the way you intended and that it's always that way, so that when you start working with the development group to deploy applications in there, you're guaranteeing that you're not changing the behaviors or the security posture to that infrastructure and everything on it.
So you're seeing, let me coin a phrase then, is this security as code? Like you're now being able to codify a series of these are the conditions that we require, that are all our communications are encrypted, like those kinds of things. Is that feasible?
So it's interesting. There isn't the gatekeeper yet to be able to provide enforcement to block, right? So, but there are things like the Azure Security Center and through the management APIs themselves. It is not that difficult to be able to write PowerShell scripts or code that would be able to read those metadata artifacts of pretty much any resource in Azure,
right?
And tell you what its state is. It's kind of interesting. I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes ago, you had someone on, they were talking about, you know, security in the cloud. And
Paul Keeley.
Yeah. And it was a great conversation about, you know, what to look for and what to do. And, you know, he was talking about some of the things that he has to do. And I'm looking at that and I cringe and I go, yeah, you know what? Everyone should be thinking like that. The fact of the matter, there was this one point of his conversation where he's talking about, well, you know, where are they going to turn 2-factor authentication? How you know and how you look at that? And I'm like, in Azure AD, that's a single attribute that you can query in a single line and know, are your admins using 2-factor auth? So if someone turned that off, you should know. And this is where it starts getting interesting, because there's this chain of events that you can start doing in a cloud infrastructure to provide this decoupled event-based mechanism for managing and monitoring and all that infrastructure, all that data. As an example, it's possible to get change detection when certain things occur, which may then cause a triggered event to run. So like there's things like Azure Functions and Azure Automation that you can trigger off certain types of events. So if all of a sudden you see an administrator disabling their need for 2FA, that gets written out to a log and that log event could get picked up and signal something in like a storage queue. And then that queue could automatically trigger an Azure function to alert you through the notification hub to send you a push notification to say, hey, Bob just removed this 2FA requirement. Wait a minute. Why did he do that? What's going on? What was its purpose?
I mean, I like the logging angle from the point of view of just to know the truth that this happened.
Right. And it's separated, right? So you get this non-repeatable log. So dependent on the permission set and roles that you set up in Azure, you know, you could have it set up. What I like to do when I do this kind of stuff is you set up in a group mechanism. So no one administrator has all the power.
Right.
So then at the end of the day, when they make a change, like there may be a reason for it, but blast that out to the rest of the administrators so that they know. So there's a log of it and an event that's been triggered. And those events then allow you to take whatever your business processes are and apply action to it. Maybe that action's just to follow up and find out why. Others may be to immediately be pushing that into your ticketing system to go take a look and say, what just happened and why?
Right.
And it's not just like admin actions. It could be anything. So imagine if you're a company that's deploying applications for your enterprise, and the next thing you do is someone in DevOps makes a change. Let's say you're in Europe as an example. Now you're having to deal with GDPR, and they do something as simple as set up a storage account in the US.
Right.
Well, that's not actually going to meet the requirements of GDPR in many ways. And you want to know about that. You want to know that that infrastructure has been deployed to a region that you haven't approved. Or maybe it's, hey, I've turned off the encryption on my SQL database. I want to know about that right away. And I've seen that personally where, you know, we had developers that had right intentions in mind. They built out a system to quickly deploy using VSTS to get things pushed into the cloud. And they just missed a single setting and they basically put the application in a less secure set than what IT wanted it to. And because they're now trying to rush at this concept of DevOps and IT getting together and working closer together, it has the potential to expose us to more risk if we're not careful. So you just want to have that oversight and be able to use the tooling to support that, which IT should be doing. And I think that everything as code to me is, it's not just DevOps. It's not just about DevSecOps. It's really about IT people having a handle of every single configuration change, every single asset deployment that goes on so that you know what's happening. These days, it's scary when people you know, the check-in code, and next thing you know, it's got a storage account or something on there that you didn't want exposed.
Right.
And then all of a sudden someone's using that to spin up more resources and utilize that in ways you don't intend it. And they can do that very, very quickly. I remember hearing about a scenario where someone accidentally got out the key for provisioning VMs, and some guys were using that to harvest, do Bitcoin harvesting. They'd spin it up for an hour, kill the VM, then rerun it in a new data center. And what ended up happening was, is that it was hard to track that, because by the time administrators would know something was gone, the VM was dead, moved to a new data center. And if you're in a large enterprise where you literally have, you know, thousands of resources sitting in Azure, that's hard to find if you're not careful.
Yeah.
But you can monitor for that. You could look for those behaviors, and you should be able to alarm on that. And those alarms can come through things like, you know, Azure automation. You know, every time a VM is up, I want to do these things. I want to cause these events to occur and track it. And it's getting better with Event Grid. A lot of the Microsoft teams now are starting to push a change event source so that you know when things are going on, so then you can get alerted to it and take action.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it does speak to this idea that we could get to a place where we are describing an entire set of security policies and implementing them. These, I guess, it's a variety of tools, right? I mean, obviously, Azure Automation plays a role in there.
Yeah.
What else? Azure AD clearly is going to be important in that scenario.
Well, that's the pivot, right? It's the identity backplane to everything. And so Azure AD plays a critical role, especially when you start thinking about roles and using RBAC, because role-based access control exists on every asset in Azure. And being able to properly manage and monitor that makes life a lot easier. And things like the Azure Security Center takes advantage of that, because it'll tie into it and allow you to look for those type of things. And there are policy-based enforcement rules there that can do things. Now, it is possible that you can have reactionary policies that can automatically lock down and make those changes and do that. Today, I don't think there's a lot of people that embrace that, because it's just too easy to accidentally cause more damage than good if you're automating something that you don't truly understand why is that spinning up or how that's spinning up.
Right.
I saw that with someone that was trying to use that with Azure containers, where they were freaking out because all of a sudden these containers were kicking off, and they didn't know that the developers were trying to do that on purpose to quickly spin up infrastructure, get billed by the second, and things like ACI, Azure Container Instances, and then throw it away, right? Which is exactly what they wanted to do. Or Azure Functions, which is, you can be either billed by the second through consumption plans, or you can use app services and, you know, be billed based on the plan. But what's interesting about that is that there's so many discrete separate systems, linking them, tying them all together is always a pain. And that's actually one of the reasons that with the new startup I'm working on, that's exactly what we're doing, is creating all those linkages between all the different resources in Azure. So you get a single posture, similar to Azure Security Center, but entirely different. And we're looking against policy so you can apply it quickly and take action. That operational insight's important, and not just across Azure, but pretty much any cloud resource you want to use. So,
you know, one of our original promises of the cloud was this automated elasticity.
Yeah.
Right. That it would just scale automatically back and forth. But that's just not that simple. I've mostly seen organizations just over provision for a peak time.
Yeah.
And pay that cost rather than try and automatically move it up.
Yeah. Well, you know, some resources, especially today, have the ability that there's auto-scaling configuration built right in it. So
right.
If you're deploying an app service, and you could set things up and say, hey, listen, if I see 85% of CPU contention for a period of 5 minutes, I want you to spin up another instance, right? And you can say, hey, after 30 minutes that it's under 50%, I want you to spin down. Or, you know, it gives you the ability to have some flex on there. And from a development-centric point of view, you can programmatically put that in there.
Sure.
But you can go further by decoupling a lot of these things, so you don't need to have that as much. So like, a good example is if you have an enterprise application that does something, let's say, like reporting, well, you don't need to have infrastructure always running that's barely, you know, sitting idle if you only need it for a short period of time. You know, I was one of the presenters at the Global Azure Bootcamp that was just happened here, you know, just last weekend. And we were having a conversation with this one gentleman that was like, yeah, we do this stuff about, you know, once a day, we run for about 5 minutes. We have to do this. So we have these VMs sitting. I go, well, why don't you shut down the VMs when you don't need them? And he goes, wait, what? It's like, you know, through Azure Automation, you could set this stuff up to say in off-peak times, you literally turn that off so you're not being billed for it. And he's like, oh, no, and then he was like, well, now we have this code that we're constantly connecting to the queue to see if there's anything. We use the peak messaging. It's like, well, you do understand there's a transaction every time you do that. You're being billed for that. Why don't you instead have a trigger that tells you when a message comes in, and then you can execute it using something like an Azure function? And then it can go off and do some of that work. And goes, well, the Azure function doesn't give me this. And I said, well, have the Azure function do nothing more than fire a webhook off to an Azure automation that can then run a runbook and do the work when you need to. He's like, you can do that? And I'm like, yeah, that's been there for years.
That's the point.
You should go take a look at this stuff. You now have IT people that can think like developers. And instead of building, you know, components inside of a single project in an application, you're building out infrastructure as code in a way that you can build it and script it to do actions based off of what you need it to do. And you can reduce your costs. In some cases, you can go the other way too, if you're not careful. And that is, with such great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
If you're not careful, you may very well easily scale up and end up spending a lot of money. I got a friend of mine who had a defect in one of his runbooks, and it ended up spinning up his infrastructure. He went from about $300 a month for this one service that he was using to $6,000 in a single month.
Ouch.
And that was just because he wasn't watching and he didn't know. And it was a defect that was there. So, you know, once he figured it out, you know, when he talked to Microsoft about it, they worked something out. But more importantly is he learned that, you know, you can scale up as much as you want to. Scaling down is just as important. And you need to understand the difference and when to do it and how to monitor for that.
Yeah, no, not a trivial thing to do. And Azure Functions has always been, you know, this sort of great way to automate scale.
Yeah.
But it's been a very dev-y tool. It's interesting to hear it talked about in the context of IT.
Yeah, well, you think about it, like, especially on things like triggers, like behind the scenes with Azure Functions, there's lots of ways you can do it. You could have a scheduled trigger. So basically time trigger that says, hey, every hour go do something. And that's pretty basic. If you're used to cron jobs, you can pretty much get an Azure function to execute.
Sure.
But then the question is, well, how do I use an Azure function? I don't know C# or something. Well, first off, Azure functions can be written in a ton of different languages, not just C#. But more importantly, is that can be used as just a triggering action to go do other things. And so at the end of the day, if you're a PowerShell guy, you can make this work in PowerShell, you know, and if you can use Azure automation and tied runbooks to be doing a whole bunch of different things, not just in the cloud, but even on your on-premise infrastructure too. Yes, it's driven through the cloud, but it can take action and push down to your agents that are sitting on your servers at your private data center, or, you know, on your PCs that are at the desks. And you can actually drive all that. Because at the end of the day, when you think about what IT ultimately is about, is you're going to do some sort of thing to take action to do some other thing. And that usually requires someone or something to kicking it off. And at the end of the day, triggers are really good for that. So
right.
I look at things like queue triggers as a good example. It's, you know, Azure storage is so cheap and it can handle so much load. You can literally just have messages that get pushed in there and then have that take action. So an Azure function or an on-prem runbook, it could just do something based off of something getting pushed in there. So now an IT guy can figure out what that looks like. Maybe they have business systems that can echo out something or push something into the queue, which then allows some system outside of that to take action or processing. So maybe running that report once a day or executing some other logic that you've written out in some whatever scripting language. Like I know guys that are doing things in Python and doing things in Perl and doing things in Go, and they found ways to leverage Azure's automation and Azure functions to do this stuff. Now, I'm a coder guy, so I do like functions because these days Microsoft's done an amazing job for its tooling in things like Visual Studio to make it really easy and to allow you to work on it offline. So you can build it offline on your own desktop, test it and run it offline. And then when you're happy, you could push that up into your source control and then have Azure functions running in the cloud, take care of it and run from there.
Absolutely.
That kind of benefit allows us to see, and this is where I go back to this everything is code, is you're starting to actually leverage things like source control and peer review and these aspects to do whatever your IT function may be. So like when you're thinking about that conversation we had with, you know, your previous show where, you know, they were talking about, well, what happened? You've got to write these scripts to take advantage of looking for 2FA. It's like, yeah, that is an IT responsibility at the end of the day. A programmer, you can write a script to do that. And we can automate a lot of that stuff. Got to know what to look for. There's still that. There's still knowledge needed there. But you absolutely could leverage the Azure cloud to do that kind of stuff.
For sure. And Dana, give me one moment here for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects called AllReady focuses on getting volunteers into the right place at the right time using cloud and mobile technology. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. And we're back. So, you know, this conversation's coming up more and more, but this idea that IT folks need to write some kind of code, some kind of scripts, which they've always done.
Yep.
But today, those scripts represent significant business value. They're not a personal thing you used to carry around on a USB key, and you're the only one who uses them. The idea that you would have scripts that are checked into source control, that are monitored and managed, and that multiple people can use them, or in fact, as you're describing, are now an automated part of IT's workflow for security enforcement and logging.
Yeah.
That's a very different kind of code.
Well, and you think about it, like I love things like Visual Studio Online because they give us the power as a developer to be able to have build automation, test automation, and everything on there. But as an IT guy, it is just as important because now you can do things like use ARM template deployments right in there and have build automation. Very similar. Like this is where I think we're blurring the lines between DevOps and IT and really starting to get to this place where maybe developers need to be responsible for some of that IT infrastructure. Maybe the IT people need to be responsible for understanding how the development is being done so that we can still keep the separation when needed for roles and responsibilities, but that we can be more agile and get things done quicker and have a much more streamlined approach to doing this. Like, you know, we're talking now with things like, you know, Azure Data Lake and everything that's sitting there, that we're talking huge amounts of data that we need Sure. to manage and maintain and monitor. I don't want to be having people doing that manually. Like, yeah, maybe it's good for job security. And if, you know, the operator from hell is one of your favorite things to read, you may care very deeply of making sure people don't understand that black art. But a responsible IT professional knows that it's not about them. It's about making sure the business is always has the capacity and capability to do whatever they need to be growing, because ultimately that's what a business is about. And that means to me that we want to be able to automate everything and anything we can so that we have a consistent approach to managing, monitoring, and maintaining it. And in the end, that's one of the things that we can do here. So if you start using things like VSTS, build runbooks to deploy ARM templates or to deploy configuration changes in management or monitor and review when you do make a policy change that can be there, that becomes extremely powerful. And because you can tie that directly into the VSTS, like into the Git repo,
right,
that means that you're actually making those changes on your machine as you're testing it and validating it. Once you're confident, you create a pull request. You can have someone review that so other people understand what you're doing, making sure it's documented in the wiki. And next thing you know, you're pushing that up into the mainline and boom, now we've got, how do we maintain this? So in right. the worst case scenario, if something is compromised, if something is destroyed, if something goes wrong, what is our mean time to recovery? It can be very, very short if that's all automated and be able to be delivered in the cloud. Or better yet, because we've done such a great job, as the company grows and needs more of whatever that is, it becomes easy to deploy and manage that app. And if you combine that with everything else like Azure AD for the identity backplane, for the single sign-on so people have access to these applications, you're making it easier for them to get access to the wealth of data that's going to just continue to grow at enormous rates and do so in a way that we can keep up with it, because there's just so much going on and so many changes happening in this IT landscape. I want to automate everything I can. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, the line I've always used when people are worried about job security is like, no IT organization has ever gotten to the bottom of their to-do list.
Yeah.
Ever.
That's
ever,
so true.
ever. So yep. relax. Like, exactly. Did you really want to flip screwdrivers? Is that what made you happy? Or you're all about assigning ACLs? Is that what makes you happy? Like, well, then you've got a different problem. But
yeah, exactly.
Providing value to your organization from an IT perspective, like, that's an infinite stack of work.
Yep. Yeah. And Microsoft knows that. And they see that the tooling they're making is not just for developers out there. Yeah, I know that a lot of time they're marketing towards the Azure developers building the apps, but take a look at what's on that stack. You know, IT can leverage that and do that just as easily, if not better. You know, a lot of times they invest so much in third-party tools to do a lot of things that are sitting right there in front of them that they can use. You don't need to do that. You just need to understand the tools in front of you.
Sure.
And I know that's hard, especially for a lot of IT people, because they're very shackled to the thinking of their on-premise infrastructure and they don't want to get away from that. And I think that there's always going to be a place for infrastructure on-premise. I honestly don't care where the infrastructure is. I think you need to maintain and manage it just as well. And just like you said at the start of the show here, you can't abdicate responsibility to the cloud vendors. It's yours. You own the data. Ultimately, you're responsible. You're the custodians. You need to know how these systems work and you
sure.
need to know how to make sure that they work well and for you. You're not a servant to it. It serves you and your business.
Do you find folks in the IT space just sort of repelled by Visual Studio? That's a dev tool. Why would I go there?
Absolutely. Actually, 9 times out of 10, when I talk about things like IT automation and everything as code, I don't ever say Visual Studio. I say VSTS. And until they ask me what the heck that is,
right,
then I say, well, okay, well, you know, Visual Studio Team Services. A dev tool. No, it doesn't have to be. But
yeah.
Why shouldn't you think about it like a way for you to automate and do all this stuff?
I think VSTS is badly named.
Yeah. What would you name it?
I don't know. That's a very tough problem. But the aspects of continuous integration, of instrumentation, like these are all more important parts than the code, right? The code is actually a small part of this equation overall. Build it any way you want. This is more about how your code lives in your ecosystem than anything else.
I think a lot more people gravitate on the IT side to Azure Automation once they learn about it because they realize what it's capable of doing. I think in many ways, if Microsoft kind of merges a lot of the value and benefits that VSTS has for what I'd call release management into the Azure Automation side, I think there'd be more comfort there. They wouldn't need to care as much. But when I think about it as everything is code, I want that to be in this pipeline, in the same tooling that the devs and the IT people can share. Because ultimately, that's a great asset to have. You know, developers are very, very smart people. They're very introverted in many ways, not all the time, but a lot of times. And they don't want to deal with the IT side of things. They just they trust that to the IT people. Well, if they start working together and those lines blur, that's what DevOps was supposed to be. But what scares a lot of IT people is that means, well, they don't need me anymore because DevOps will take care of it. And I don't think that's the case at all.
No, I don't think it's true at all.
IT is needed more than ever because there's a maturity level of understanding production rollout. Mm-hmm. Most developers don't think or act or know about a lot of that.
No.
And IT people do. And they have that responsibility. But on the flip side of it, it scares me when I see and hear about people automating everything with developers and not realizing you just deployed what to where? and where was the oversight? Who's responsible for that to touch the customer like that? And that's where IT has a very pivotal part. And I think when you combine everything that you have, all the benefits, like I take a look at everything from just-in-time administration that's built into, you know, managing the VMs and access to everything that's on there, to the reporting and logging and everything that you have available through Azure for that, I think there's a huge benefit of the IT people and the dev people getting together and realizing that these tools can help the business, which ultimately is what you want, and allow them to work together to get things done quicker. And I want to use the word more aggressively, but that's probably not the right wording. It's just like there's so much available to you that you could never have before. Like, hey, you need a Redis cache? It's a single line, you know?
Yeah, the cadence just naturally increases. Like the goal isn't to go faster, it's to be better. The side effect is you go faster because you do have more confidence.
Yeah, and now there's so many more systems and so much more data. Like I can't remember the numbers, but I remember Satya had quoted in one of his presentations about just the sheer amounts of petabytes of data that will be accessible and usable. And it's like, you're not going to be able to do that if you're thinking about your servers that are sitting over in one place on-prem that you don't want to have touched and managed. And how do you scale? How do you handle that? How do you ingest all that? Chances are, while there are some very well-designed IT infrastructures to support it, in most cases, at the time when that was designed, these type of problems didn't exist the same way as they do now, and which will change in the next couple of years.
Sure.
You know, you look at the intelligent edge and the whole way that they're starting to try to get everything to send signals and process all that. I don't know anybody that wants to invest in that infrastructure on premise to try to do that. You know, why not leverage the cloud for this stuff? Take advantage of it and use it. You know, it's just a better way of doing things.
There's really almost no other way. And I do think it's interesting when you finally get IT guys who are taking these automation scripts and things seriously and go, hey, but how do I back them up? How do I know who changed them? How do I roll back to a previous version? It's like, the devs solved this a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
It's Git.
Yep.
And it keeps all of that information for you. And here's the tooling for it. I'm just delighted when you have that conversation between the teams and they suddenly, you know, the folks that you're asking are delighted that you're asking, that you even care, and vice versa, that it's, oh, you guys have figured this out and you already have a good workflow and, you know, and off we go. It doesn't always work that way, mind you. I mean, but, you know, depending on the organization, you really don't want to reinvent the wheel. Source control is already solved in most organizations. Use it.
Yeah. Well, and you think about things like, I think there was a show you guys did a while ago just on like on DSCN versus DSCN.
Yep.
And you look at that and say, well, did you know you can combine that with your ARM deployment templates to be able to give you that reproducible, clean environment exactly how you want it? Every single time. So now the developers can have what IT gives them in production. which 10 years ago was almost impossible.
Right.
Right. And now it's like, yeah, it's possible. You can pull that out. I remember, you know, he was talking about how he was able to get a snapshot of a SharePoint infrastructure, put it on his laptop, and understand the exact configuration so that they would know what to look for. Well, that's exactly what developers have been asking for forever.
Yeah.
And so it's like working closer together, you know, this yin and yang of taking advantage of how the IT landscape has shifted and changed is beneficial to everybody. And I think if people start thinking about automation, and I like saying everything is code. I want to get a t-shirt made up where it's just basically, you know, it's the curly brackets and it says everything is code, and then have everyone argue with me. Because like, at least it has a dialogue.
And yes.
Say, why don't you think it's that way?
Yeah.
Like I remember years ago, Microsoft had this very interesting product called Small Business Server that was trying to just glue every Microsoft product known to man onto a single server. And it was funny as the purists that were on the enterprise were like, there's no way I would ever put my SQL server with my Exchange server on the same server. And it's like, yeah, you're right, in an enterprise, but maybe in a small business, that's not, you know, so realistic. And now I hear those same people in the SBS world, the small ones, like, well, I can't do anything now because, you know, SBS isn't here anymore. Everything's going off Office 365. What am I supposed to do? And it's like, well, take a look at what's in the cloud. Like, you know, there's Azure AD. You could do Cloud Join. You could do a bunch of things there. But you know what? That's not going to work if you don't understand how that's all going to function. Now, you want to reproduce that. The 50 customers you have, what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, you've got to figure it out. The funny thing is, of course, when you get that cloud offering together, there's even more things they can use, which means more work for you.
Right. And more opportunity and more ability to give your customers a bigger portfolio of solutions that can help them to be more successful.
There's only more choice, and the rate the cloud features are growing is astonishing. And it's really not growing anywhere else. This is where the action is.
Yep.
Well, Dana, what's next for you? Where can we see you? Got some new blog posts coming, or are you going to be speaking at conferences?
Yeah, so I put up a blog. I kind of merged all of my separate places where I was doing writing and everything. So it's over at danep.com now. So it's a single place for that. Like I said, I'm just working on a new startup here in Vancouver. So you'll see a lot more from security and Azure for me over the next little while. Obviously, going to be on the speaking circuits and doing things locally here. I've been doing a lot of speaking at the user groups, and we're going to start, you know, touring around the US and Canada to talk more about everything as code. And more importantly, when you do that, how do you think about the security aspects of that?
Yeah.
Because that's the biggest problem.
That's the real debate.
You can't abdicate that responsibility, but you don't know where to look. There's just so many moving parts, so many dials, and so many different portals. How do you make sure you can safeguard that?
Sure.
I'll be out there talking about that to the community and doing everything I can to make sure we're educating the masses.
Awesome. Dana Epp, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Missed you.
Thanks for the invitation. Thanks, man.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.